Welcome to the Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program.
And aloha, America. Welcome to the show. It's Monday, the start of a brand new week to see what kind of lunacy and mayhem we are going to get from various world governments and the corporate media and other circumstances. I tell you, I was like a lot of other people. I thought the new year, new president, new administration, you know, something's got to improve. Something's got to change. And, you know, I want to be very clear here. I don't actually enjoy doing this. It takes a lot of time away from some other things I'd rather be doing. I do this out of necessity, as do so many other people here in the blogosphere, and like Alex Jones and the other hosts here at the GCN. We feel it's necessary because the American corporate mainstream media has abandoned its role of watchdog on the abuses of government. And I actually had a debate with our local cable TV provider not too long ago where I said, well, you know, we don't even watch CNN or MSNBC or Fox News anymore because it's nothing but crud. And can't we turn that off and save the money, you know, because the rates are going up again? And they said, oh, no. You know, you need to have those channels. I said, why? It's you know, they lied to us about Saddam's nuclear weapons. And the cable TV representative's defense was, well, they're just only reporting what the government says. And I came back and I said, that's not the job of the media in this country. Traditionally, the media is supposed to point out where the government is lying to us all. And if the media has failed in that job, forcing us on the blogosphere to take it up, then why should we be forced to pay for a failure? And that was the last I heard from our cable TV company representative. And I'm not expecting an answer back from them to my request that we disconnect BBC America, because I don't want to pay for that either. And, you know, it's like the really fun things they'll charge you extra for, but by golly, for that basic service, you will watch the propaganda channels that we're going to give you, and you have no choice. All right, turning to the economy here and getting off my rant, my Monday morning rant. I should make that a regular feature of the show. It was a volatile day on the stock market. It was up and down by the hundreds. It ended almost with a push. Up 38 points. The media is trying to wave confetti and streamers over that and say, well, that's a good thing. It proves the economy is doing very well. But plus 38 on a day when the volatility is swinging through 250, 300 points, it's just noise. Could have just as easily ended down. In fact, late in the day, it was very obviously plunging down. And then, of course, right at the last minute, just about a half hour before Goldman Sachs closes for the day, huge number of put options came through and shoved it back up again. So it ended in plus 38. Now, this, of course, stands in stark contrast to the news that even before the stock market opened this morning, some 74,000 job cuts were announced, 74,000 just on the first day of business this week. And we're expecting another round of unemployment numbers to hit on Thursday. So there'll be another down pressure there. Caterpillar Incorporated announced they're letting go 20,000 people. You know, a third of their profits are off because a twofold thing. First of all, construction is down in the United States. New housing starts are down. New commercial property starts are down. The kind of industries that require these heavy machines from Caterpillar are down. And, of course, Israel seems to have run out of Palestinian homes to bulldoze. So they're not ordering either. We also had layoff notices from Sprint Nextel. And I got to tell you, I'm not feeling all that sorry about Sprint because their customer service was really lousy. The reason I left them when my contract expired, they double billed me 2 months in a row. And, you know, they'd send the bill and I'd pay it. And then I'd get a notice saying, if you don't pay this, your phone's going to be turned off. And I'd fax back the bank statement saying, yes, it had been paid. And they'd say, okay, no problem. Then I'd get another notice saying, we're going to turn you off. And I paid it twice. I paid my bill twice, 2 months in a row, and as soon as my contract was up, they were gone. So Sprint may be a victim of its own really terrible consumer support service department. Home Depot is letting a lot of people go. And Pfizer, New York drug maker, was letting 19,000 people go. And it's not been, yeah, well, there was an official announcement. IBM, we heard last week, IBM was starting to lay off a lot of people here in the United States. And we finally got an official announcement. And it's kind of a left-handed announcement because the announcement was to reassure everybody that none of the planned job cuts were going to affect operations in India. I can't tell you how relieved that makes me to hear that. That IBM is laying off thousands of people here in the United States, but don't worry, none of those jobs that got outsourced to India are going to be touched. Because they don't want to lose that very generous tax credit that the U.S. government gave to them to encourage them to take these jobs to other countries. Well, with management like that around the world, it's not surprising we're starting to see governments pay the price for some very selfish and short-sighted thinking. The government of Iceland has collapsed. They're not even going to make it into the new elections they finally planned on having in a couple of months. The Iceland government is effectively unable to function anymore, and we don't know what's going to happen there, but all I can say is good for the Icelanders who understood that government policy is the reason for the economic disaster, and they enacted that principle that we have in the Declaration of Independence, that when any government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or abolish it and to institute new forms of government. We're going to start seeing this happen in a lot of places around the world. Still have rioting going on in Greece. None of this, of course, is being reported in the American media other than as quick footnotes and bottom crawls in the hopes that you won't notice it and perhaps get some bad ideas. Can't have those uppity American taxpayers who are losing their homes and their jobs start blaming the U.S. government for it. My goodness, that would be un-American. Meanwhile, over in Great Britain, as their economy continues to suffer, Gordon Brown is pushing global system as hard as he can. Global system. Well, as I've commented many times before on this show, globalism is this idea that if you have a building and you prop open all the fire doors, things are going to work a little bit better and smoother in the building. And yeah, they will, because you're not having to stop and start to open and close the doors as you go through. But, of course, the first time you have a fire, the whole building goes up. That's the reason for having fire doors. And national borders serve that same function. They serve the same function for economies as fire doors do in a building or watertight hatches do in a ship. And the reason that you go through the effort of opening and closing those doors and hatches is so that if there is a mishap in one part of the structure, it doesn't destroy the system as a whole. A fire is contained to one room, flooding contained to one compartment, and economic meltdown confined to one country. By opening up all these hatches and doors, the economic crisis in the United States has spread to the rest of the world without restriction. So globalism is the reason the entire planet is now in trouble. And so Gordon Brown wants to push globalism as the solution. This is like saying more ice is going to save the Titanic. And it is the classic definition of insanity. He wants to keep doing the same thing, but expects a different outcome. And I know the globalists want to see this as a reason to push the globalist agenda, but globalism is what got us here. We have to turn back and turn away from that. We have to go back to nice, neat, little national compartments that contain economic upheaval. It is nonsense to continue going in the globalism direction when globalism is the reason we are in such trouble. Meanwhile, we are just now getting a story about a 93-year-old man who froze to death in his home in Michigan because the electric company had put a limiter on his electric power because he was having difficulty paying his bills. This in the same country that is pouring trillions of dollars into Wall Street, into the Citigroup, who turned around and took that money and bought themselves a $50 million plush corporate executive jet. This is the same country that has given Israel more than four times the entire cost of the Apollo moon program. And we have yet to see a giant leap for mankind come out of that. And a 93-year-old American man freezes to death in his home in Michigan. This is a country whose priorities are seriously, seriously screwed up. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
Welcome to the Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program. Call Mike now at 800-259-9231. 800-259-9231.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show. We do have a caller waiting on the line. We're going to get to John here in a minute, but I just wanted to get to this right at the top of this segment. We're basically coming up on the end of Barack Obama's first week in the job as president. Everyone's talking about the first 100 days and everything. Talking about the first seven, his approval ratings are already down 15% over a week ago. 15% first week on the job. And the reason for this, I think, is very simple. Remember on Inauguration Day, and I said they have so oversold this guy as the new savior of the nation that if he's not walking on water and raising the dead by Friday, he's going to be in trouble. Obviously, by Friday, he was not walking on water. No dead people were brought back to life, and his numbers are plunging. And basically, on a more serious note, the reason is people are beginning to understand that the change Barack Obama talked about during his campaign, it's cosmetic. It isn't substantive. Yes, they're closing Guantanamo, but those prisoners who've been tortured are just being moved to new locations. And Barack Obama is saying the United States will not use torture anymore, but he leaves open the door for us to ship these poor guys to places that do torture them on our behalf to contract it out. He has not restored our nation to the fundamentals of the Bill of Rights as of yet. And people are beginning to see that, you know, you can change the color of the lipstick on that pig, but it's still a pig underneath it all. And I think people, because of the cynicism coming out of the last 8 years of the Bush administration, I don't think they're going to cut Barack Obama the slack that Obama's team is hoping they're going to get. The political honeymoon is definitely over on this. And Obama has already burned up his political capital. He's trying to talk about a new stimulus package, which we, the working people, already know is going to be a token amount. They're talking about letting us keep an additional $10 for every paycheck in withholding. And meanwhile, the banks and Wall Street are still getting billions and billions and billions of dollars. This brings us to our caller, John from Winnipeg. Aloha, John. Welcome to the show. I understand you want to talk about derivatives.
Yeah. Hey, Mike. Great show. You're a great guy. Keep up the good work. Derivatives. I had called your show, I don't know, maybe yesterday or the day before, and you had a guy calling up talking about his uncertainty about derivatives, but that he had learned thus far that in some cases they're actually backed by zero capital. And I was hoping I'd just take a minute to just quickly say, 60 Minutes did an interview on an expert of derivatives, and I'm 99.9% it was on 60 Minutes. Pretty sure. I'll try to see if, mm-hmm. see if I can find the video. But on it, the guy came forward and explained what a derivative was, and he pulled out a so-called derivative, and it was about 1,900 pages of small-type mathematical games that go nowhere, and mm-hmm. it's not required to be backed by any real capital. So what that means is it's just a stack of paper with a bunch of words written on it. But why would somebody spend so much time to write so many words on 1,900 pieces of paper? Why? Because two investment bankers will get together and they'll say, hey, I'll pay $10 billion for that stack of paper. And the other investment banker will say to him and say, look, I'll sell you this $10 billion of nothingness as long as you sell me $10 billion. And so both of them will exchange the sales, and they'll say, well, we just purchased $10 billion in derivatives, so we get to mark this as a capital gain for our private investors. They get dividends, rewards through dividends, and all kinds of games they play. In Canada, our Canadian government did a thing a number of years ago talking about how all the Western banks in North America have there's the normal shareholders, and then there's the top secret shareholders that we're not supposed to know about that get really the bulk of all the assets that are generated. So we got to remember, this is just a constant cash machine. All they take in is money. They're not required to cover loans, and they're just constantly taking money in. So for them to be broke is insane. But this is what they say, well, we got to pay for the toxic assets that are in these banks. And that's really what this is. You know, they say, well, there are zillions and zillions of derivatives, really. They say that, but it's not backed by anything. This is just a game that they've played to pocket the real assets or the real capital that the bank holds into their private holdings while leaving this stack of mountains of paper for the public to deal with. And that's what we're dealing with. They don't have, it doesn't represent any real capital. So if you've bought $50 billion worth of derivatives, nobody wants to buy it off you anymore because it was a scam that was running then, and now people are up on it a little bit. So you've got all these stacks of paper that are worth, you know, or worth trillions of dollars that nobody's going to buy. It's worthless. And it's just the reason it's 1,900 pages is they don't want you, they try to get you confused on all the rules that they play by. But really, it's just a stack of paper with a bunch of words written on it.
So yeah, that's really all it is. And the bottom line is it's just another form of gambling, and that's the way it is. They've turned Wall Street away from being a mechanism for ordinary Americans to share in the largesse of American industry, and they've turned it into a speculator's paradise on Earth. And the way that we know very simply that derivatives was just a scam is more money is owed in the derivatives than ever actually existed in the first place.
Yeah.
How can you owe money that never really existed to begin with? It's a manufactured debt using manufactured money. And as you say, the purpose is to move the real wealth of the country, the physical assets, into a few private hands and dump a load of fancy paper on the public,
yeah.
And the public goes along with it. They think they've got something that's worth something,
right.
And they don't really. It's just impressive looking numbers on a piece of paper.
Yeah, and they don't. Yeah, and two, they don't want us to understand these things because if we did, we'd say, well, we've already given them officially $350 billion, but it's more like $8 trillion through congressional hearings, and they don't want to tell us what they've done with the money so far. So how does it benefit us at all? It doesn't. It makes no sense for Obama to say he wants to give them more money that'll be totally unaccountable and just, as we've learned so far, just go into their private hands. We're confused on the nature of a bank. We think the banks are serving for our interests, but they're private organizations. And I think the answer is in understanding that it's our currency, those are our banks, and they should be operating for our benefits, not for themselves personally. But this, it's just like in Wisconsin, I think, with Senator, I can't remember the guy who was running Wisconsin at that time, but he asked to bail out the casino, and they did. And the state of Wisconsin gave the casinos hundreds of millions of dollars in bailout cash. It's kind of like that. It makes no sense. All they do is, in Canada, they clear tens of billions of dollars each quarter because they don't have to cover any of our loans at all, not even a penny. In your country, they say they cover 1/20th, but it's not even that because they're able to move numbers any way they want. But they don't even cover our loans. It's in our authority that they exercise our will, but the benefit doesn't come to ourselves. It goes to them privately, like you say, and like we should all understand. And like I say, it does get complicated. I get lost myself in all their games and stuff, but I do know.
Well, that's intentional. It's to keep you from figuring out. If you have not seen the video, Money as Debt, you've got to go out, hunt it down. That will explain a very great deal. But, yeah, it's not our bank anymore. We started out with the United States owning the money supply, and the banks had to work within the people's money supply. Then with the Federal Reserve Act, they had a license to counterfeit, and it destroyed the country. And Woodrow Wilson, who signed this thing into law, wrote in his memoirs, "I know I've destroyed my own country." It was the price he paid to become president. We got to stop here. Thank you very much for the call, John. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio? Well, search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Aloha, America. Welcome back to our show. And a lot of stuff happening in the news. We've got a lot of stuff to cover. We're going to get right to it. Manfred Novak, the UN reporter on torture, who's been appointed by the Commission on Human Rights to basically look into what's been going on in the United States. Novak has concluded that President Obama is legally obligated to prosecute former President George W. Bush and former Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld for the acts of torture committed in the name of the United States government. It is not an option. Basically, what the UN is saying is that if Obama fails to prosecute for torture, that he is legally an accessory if after the fact. And Thursday's show, we're going to have a guest on here from INN World Report who basically, we put up a videotape from their network on our website yesterday of the press conference at the United Nations. And you didn't see this on the American corporate media. You saw this only on the blogosphere, but it was a press conference at the United Nations in which they lay out the facts and they say, the quote, the evidence is sitting on the table. There is no avoiding the fact that this was torture. Barack Obama, by virtue of the United States signing the UN Charter and numerous other international agreements, it is not an option. And so Barack Obama is facing his first difficult choice in office because the credibility of the United States as a whole is on the line here. If we are a moral nation, if we stand for the rule of law, there must be prosecutions for torture and other war crimes. If Barack Obama writes these people a get-out-of-jail-free card, then we know that there was no change that we could believe in. It's just more of the same that we have been seeing for the last 8 years. This is probably why his numbers are already starting to plunge. People are realizing that Barack Obama has done snookered us all again, and we voted in the lesser of two evils, and it's still pretty darn evil. Now, BBC is still defending itself over their refusal to air a fundraiser for the victims of Israel's attack on Gaza. Numerous stars are saying they will never work for the BBC again. Even the BBC's internal staff were appalled by Mark Thompson's decision to not show this. It did air on other British media last night, and everybody agrees it was fair, balanced, honest. It didn't talk about Israel. It didn't talk about Hamas. It didn't talk about any of the causes. It simply said there are some innocent victims of the military operation in Gaza. They must be helped. Here's how you can do it. Now, I want to go back a little bit in history here because it wasn't all that long ago that the BBC had a reporter, Alan Johnston, and he was being held prisoner by some militants inside Palestine, and Hamas, the legally elected government of Gaza, Hamas interceded and rescued Alan Johnston and sent him back home to BBC. And at the time, the BBC thanked Hamas. They thanked the people of Gaza for rescuing Alan Johnston from, basically, it was a kidnapping for ransom. Now that Hamas is in trouble and the people of Gaza are in trouble, BBC just turned around and stabbed them in the back. Now, originally, BBC explained the refusal to carry the Gaza fundraiser as possibly damaging to their reputation for impartiality. Not that they have one, but they like to claim that they do. And yet, in 1994, BBC ran the appeal for victims in former Yugoslavia, and impartiality was not a problem then. In 1994, BBC ran an appeal for Rwandan refugees. Impartiality was not an issue then. In 1999, BBC ran an appeal for Kosovo. Impartiality was not a problem there. In 2004, BBC ran an appeal for Sudan refugees. And impartiality was not a problem then. In 2008, just last year, BBC ran another appeal for victims in the Congo, and impartiality was not a problem then. Now, since this hypocrisy and double standard got pointed out, BBC has now changed their story. They're not talking about impartiality anymore. They're claiming that the reason they refused to show the Gaza appeal was there was no guarantee the money would actually get to the people who need it. Okay? And one of their commentators said it might even fall into the hands of Hamas. Well, Hamas is the elected government of Gaza. Who else is supposed to get it? Not the government of Israel. They got a very long history of not letting money get through to the people who really need it. Ehud Barak is facing charges for swindling the Holocaust reparations fund out of $100,000. They just threw another Israeli lawyer into jail for 12 years for ripping off Holocaust survivors. When BBC ran their show, their appeal for the Congo in 2008, that same month they ran another story in which they pointed out that due to difficulties on the ground because of all the damage from the ongoing conflict, that money was not likely to reach everybody who needed it either. And yet that did not stop BBC from running this program. Now, the reasons for this refusal to run this program, and it has upset everybody, including most of the BBC staff, has to do with Mark Thompson's close association with former Israeli Prime Minister Ariel Sharon. Mark Thompson's wife is Jewish and devoutly Zionist, and so maybe Mark Thompson is just being henpecked to not run this show. We understand that a lot of pressure was brought to bear from advertisers of companies that are primarily owned by Israeli and Jewish interests that said, don't run it. But the bottom line is that the BBC has betrayed its trust as a public resource and public utility. There are huge riots, again, not being covered here in the United States corporate media all that much. Protesters took over the Scottish headquarters of BBC and sat in there for a while. I don't know if they're still there or not. So it's BBC is just looking terrible right now. And it all goes back to Mark Thompson and a couple of other people who are just ardent Zionists and feel that it's their right to subvert the interests of the British people and common human decency, because that's what Tel Aviv wants. Now, the United States is finally getting into Gaza, and they're reporting that the damage and destruction is even worse than feared. And they're talking about a systematic destruction of farms and factories. So Israel didn't just kill people, women and children, and bomb the UN schools and the UN supply depots. They targeted the Gazans' ability to raise their own food and make their own necessities of life. They have it's scorched earth policy is what it is. We're going to go to the phones real quick. I'm sorry I kept you waiting. Patrick in Texas, aloha. What's on your mind?
Mike, enjoy the show. You do great work, and God be with
Thanks.
You. Thanks. Wanted to say, Mike, I think you lay the case out just fantastic for what will happen with the UN, but my real concern is that the Illuminati and those who are in control have planned this massively with these monsters they've put in power. Everybody's going to turn around and call for their heads, rightfully so. And now the UN, oh, how great they are, they'll have to come in and save the day and get us to prosecute our politicians, paving the way for the one world order to be jammed down our throats and for everyone to just accept the UN riding in on the white horse. I think it's also no accident that Israel happened to bomb the UN schools, so all the players who have been aggressors for years, now the UN will come along and shake their hands at our hijacked governments, and of course we will end up paying the price, these being subject to the UN One World Order, while the puppets who they've shown us to hate and to love, whatever the case may be, will do as they...
Okay, Patrick, we got to stop here. We've got commercials. We got to run. But thank you for the call. I'm going to respond to what you said as we come back from these words from our sponsors.
Can we talk?
Can we talk?
Can we talk about gun control?
Gun control?
Seems like it should work, doesn't it?
It should work.
You'd think so. Yeah.
Pass the right laws.
Pass the right laws.
And you can disarm the criminals.
You disarm them.
That's the idea.
But the problem is...
The problem?
Criminals don't obey the law.
They don't obey the law.
That's true.
After all, they're criminals.
They're criminals.
Criminals. They'll always find a way to get guns.
No matter how many laws you pass.
Which means...
Which means... They still have guns.
They still have guns. While the rest of us...
The rest of us?
The rest of us are just left defenseless.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to our show here, our last segment of our show today here. And a real quick correction, when we were talking about some of the corruption problems that we're seeing in Israel, I think I may have said Ehud Barak was cheating the Holocaust Memorial out of $100,000. That's wrong. It's actually Ehud Olmert. And this happened last summer. And as I said, they just sentenced another lawyer in Israel to 12 years for cheating a Holocaust survivor. And the reason I wanted to bring that back up again, not only make the correction, but as a lot of people know, I've been very, very concerned about the flood of Holocaust movies that showed up in the theaters and TV shows as well, magically coinciding with Israel's attack on Gaza. And I wanted to talk in particular about a movie called Defiance, yet another attempt to wring pity and sympathy out of the Orthodox account of the Holocaust story. And I guess I'm not the only one who is suffering Holocaust burnout. I'm tired of hearing about it from both sides. I'm tired of hearing about it from the Orthodox side. I'm tired of hearing about it from the revisionist. It's the first half of the last century, and we have got issues pressing today. We have genocides taking place today. We have kids being set on fire with white phosphorus today that we can deal with. What happened in World War II Germany happened before I was born, probably before you was born. We can't change that. We can't fix it. We're not responsible. We weren't there. So, there, deal with it. We have crimes taking place today that we can and should be involved in preventing, stopping, and punishing the guilty of. But anyway, get back to the movie. Daniel Craig, fine actor, the new James Bond, and he's certainly very smart to take as many different roles as he can so that he does not become too strongly typed as James Bond, as some actors have done before. But the problem is this story is, hyped as this true story of World War II heroism, and yet the reality is it's really not all that accurate. It's very biased. It's very filtered. We already know that the government of Poland is very upset with this movie because these brothers, the Bielski brothers, yes, they did save a bunch of Jewish people, and that's a good thing. But in the process, they were helping to shop the Polish resistance fighters to the Soviet Union and got some 20,000 of them killed. And this is sort of glossed over in this movie. Now we're getting a story from 2 years ago. The last surviving of the real brothers, Aaron Bielski, was arrested for cheating, swindling, a Holocaust survivor out of some $250,000. And it just goes to show that the difference between what we are being fed as history by Hollywood and what's really going on out there is a huge, huge gap. And I guess you're smart enough to pick up on it now because Defiance cost an estimated $50 million to make, which is sort of high middle for film productions these days. And the conventional wisdom in Hollywood is that you have to make 1.5 times your original production budget at the box office just to break even. So if it costs you $50 million to get to your first strike answer print, then you have to bring in $150 million at the box office just to break even. And so far, Defiance has made only $18 million at the box office. So financially, this is a complete failure. And it basically means that, yeah, people, they're either just completely turned off by all of the repetition about the Holocaust or the Orthodox story of the Holocaust, or there's been too many of them, or they recognize that it's just more propaganda, or it may just be that Defiance fell victim to Israel's incursion into Gaza, and people just weren't interested in seeing yet another movie that tries to portray, Israel as the good guy and everybody else as icky poo bad people. So, you know, that has definitely seen a tremendous fall off at the box office. And the other point I want to make here, between Ehud Olmert Aaron Bielski and this lawyer they just jailed. Obviously, it was not a new thing when Bernie Madoff was swindling his fellow Jewish people. It apparently has been going on all along. Nobody wants to talk about it. But for these losers to be swindling Holocaust survivors when they're standing, we're there for the victims of it. I mean, it's just cynical beyond all extreme. All right, we're running out of time here. I had so much. We're going to have to take it over tomorrow. And I think I want to finish with this story from the world of the computers. First of all, as predicted, more and more viruses and worms are showing up for Macintosh users. And the reason is, you know, Macintosh people were very smug about never getting any viruses and worms and stuff. And as we've commented on this show in years past, it has nothing to do with Macintosh being a superior computer. It's just there weren't enough of them to be of interest to cyber criminals. Well, that's changing. As Macintosh gets a larger and larger share of the market, and they're good machines, and I like them because they do personify the computer as appliance mindset, you know, but as they become more popular, they're becoming targets. And it's turning out they're just as vulnerable to these malicious criminals as anybody else. And there are now antivirus and security products for the Macintosh that are going to junk them up and slow them down and make them less usable, as Windows users have had to suffer for a long this time. But there is this new computer virus. This one is affecting Windows. They're saying, security experts are saying, they don't know what this virus is ultimately supposed to do. But it's a worm called Down-It-Up Conficker or Keto, and they're estimating some 15 million computers around the world. And interestingly enough, this virus sort of exploded into the wild pretty much about the same time it became apparent that Israel was not able to control the flow of information coming out of Gaza. Now, whether that's linked or just a coincidence not to be believed remains to be seen. But if you have a computer and you don't have the latest patch to Windows to make sure that this worm cannot attack you, get it. Because when this thing is turned on to do whatever it's supposed to do, it could be very, very ugly. And you just need to, keep in mind, who is it who wants the internet shut down right now? Who stands to gain if the blogosphere is jammed up, if alternative media like GCN gets shut down? Who is going to benefit, especially now when we are seeing yet again a push to demonize Iran, to turn their nuclear power station into a threat that we're all supposed to spend our money and the blood of our children to go and stop? And, you know, Israel learned a real lesson in Gaza in that they no longer, just by buying up all the media, does that give them the power to control what people are thinking around the world? And before they do anything else, before they attack anybody else, before they trick any other countries into wars on Israel's enemies, they've got to find a way to control the internet. They're not able to do it with megaphone. They're not able to do it with their legions of shills and organized posters. It didn't work this last time. And so it may be that this virus, this worm, if it gets hold in the internet, that its purpose is to be turned on at a critical time when information flow to the people needs to continue to make sure that you're really, truly informed about what's going on in the world, with the idea of blinding us and deafening us and making us dependent on the owned corporate media one more time. So get patched. If you don't know how to do it, find a friend who's a computer expert and say, I want to make sure my machine is safe from these worms, this particular one. It is just, it's going everywhere. And you're probably, if you're like me, you're getting a flood of new emails saying, oh, please open this. Please look at this. This is wonderful. What was the other one? Coca-Cola. Somebody sending out bogus emails saying, Coca-Cola has a job for you. Please click for your job application, and it loads your system up with all kinds of crud. So the hackers and spammers seem to have gone into full tilt boogie maximum overdrive in the last week, and you need to be very, very careful about what's going on. Last story for the day. Prince Turki Al-Faisal former Saudi ambassador to London and Washington and an influential member of the Saudi ruling family is warning that U.S. unconditional support for Israel risks breaking relationships with Saudi Arabia. Now, Saudi Arabia sells us gas, and they reinvest that money back in the U.S. We cannot afford to piss these people off. We'll be back tomorrow. Until then, stay safe, be well, drive carefully, and aloha, America.